It's got a death curse.
Soon, all of you will be like me. And then who will lock you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
I know this is difficult, Mary, and that's why we're here to help, okay?
I miss Peter. I miss him so much.
Mary, I want you to try to remember what happened 22 years ago on Christmas night in Lowell.
Yeah, the whole movie is an exercise in negativity and bad things.
You know perfectly well what happened, sir.
But Mary needs to know what happened, Billy. She needs to remember.
No!
Well, then maybe Simon would like to tell me what happened.
He's asleep.
Help me wake up Simon,
no!
Billy.
The setting is bad. The characters are bad. The situation goes from bad to worse.
Yeah. We got a problem.
What?
We have a problem, and I want you to know that this is not easy for me. Look at me. This is not easy for me.
Okay.
Do you understand?
All right.
We need to talk about Gordon.
What about Gordon?
Okay, he needs to take some time off, Mike.
I know how much she loves David Caruso.
Yes, Helen, regale us with your tales of how much you love David Caruso and that fat red hair of his.
Definitely not a fan.
If there's any kind of spiritual influence in this movie at all, then I can breathe a sigh of relief and give our listeners exactly what we promised for this year.
Give me a cell phone.
Don't give him the fucking cell phone.
Give me a cell phone.
Mike, this is what I'm trying to tell you.
Phone.
He's losing it, man.
Mike,
this is what I'm
phone.
Telling you. He's losing
give
it.
A cell phone.
Look at him. He's don't losing it, man. Give me the fucking cell phone.
The last 10, 15 minutes are heart-pounding, riveting. You can't blink. It's that good.
Hello. Gordon.
That shit exists, ladies and gentlemen. Multiple personalities.
It does.
That shit exists.
You tell me where they are.
Would you wake up?
Tell me.
Would you wake up?
I am fucking awake! Well, you know what? We're fucking doing it.
All right.
Session 9, Paul B.
Yeah,
for your birthday, we're doing session 9. Where's Nude?
Right here.
Nude, we're about ready to get this shit on the road. Hello again, friends and listeners. This is Cash Wampum bringing you the 96th Horror 101 episode. Our esteemed colleague, the most nefarious Paul B., has been chomping at the bit, as they say, to focus on a certain film. He's been asking for this for years now, so since this recording session was the same week as his birthday, I said fuck it, let's do it. It's good to keep your crew happy, makes for good podcasting. My biggest concern was the haunting factor. It had been 20 years since Nude and I had watched this film, and I remembered a good chunk of the story, but was it a haunted film? Does it align with the theme that we've promised you this year? The answer, my friends, is not an easy one. Personal interpretation is a big factor with this film, so we will leave that up to you. And quick note, there is absolutely no way we can cover this show in our usual format without spoiling the hell out of it. And there is somewhat of a nasty turn at the end of the film that has shock value. You've been warned. So with all that aside, we're glad you're back to join us for the Horror 101 treatment of Brad Anderson's Session 9. But before we get started, Nude and I had just returned from our trip to Cuba the same day we recorded this show, and the world-famous Brian Stewart, as you can imagine, is quite the cigar connoisseur and asked us to grab him some premium Habanos while we were down south.
And the black smoke!
Brian Stewart, you
wanted the best. You got the best.
There is
the hottest band in the world. I'm going to ask you to bring me some.
H. Upmans.
Thank you, sir. These are a joy. Thank you kindly.
One fell out of the tube, and I was looking at it going, yeah, that looks like a pretty heavy cigar,
man. This is going to be nice. I can't wait. Now we just need some bonfires this year so I can enjoy these.
So five, yeah. We can only get five with that price.
That's fine. They're hard to find. And much, it's like when you get your drink. You got a drink that's yours, that's your drink, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Cigars are very particular. And once you find one, and I went through 7, 8, Dave and I went, Dave T.
Yep.
He and I, we used to go to this tobacconist on Olette, and we tried different ones. And I didn't care for the stronger ones, and I didn't care for the ones that are too mild. And I found these. These are the most perfect smoke I've ever had. They are the same smoke on the first puff as they are on the absolute last with an inch of cigar left. They are absolutely beautiful.
We got 50 of the little Cohibas.
Oh, Cohibas. Yeah. Nice.
You know, the little five-minute jobs. Yeah. That, I mean, most of the time, like Sartori will have a cigar. He likes the small ones. He likes Cohibas. So I got 50 of those. Cost like $75 in the exchange, which isn't bad for Cohibas anyway.
Yeah. You know, what's the limit when you come back?
50 per person.
Oh, that's not bad, actually.
200 cigarettes or 50 cigars per person.
I think the most I've ever spent on a single cigar was $35. I'm not a big spender. They're way more expensive than what I get.
Yeah.
I mean, you got like guys like Schwarzenegger who smoke Dom Perignon 57s, which it's $25,000 a box.
I can smoke stogies in my house because I'm a stud. I'm ballsy. I don't take no shit from anyone. I smoke my stogie anywhere I want. I don't have to find a hideout place like you.
Nick, well, he mentioned yesterday on the way that he couldn't make it. So I messaged him. I'm like, what up? You know, what's the deal? And he's like, apologies. He's like, something about an urgent matter. It's like not a bad urgent matter, but something that he had tried everything in his power to try to move away from today. And it just wasn't possible. So he sent his apologies. I'm like, well, where the fuck is our show going to get our trademark snark? This show's not going to have any fucking snark. We need more snark. But no, you can't be snarky because you've been wanting this fucking show for years. I'm not the only one.
Hold on.
This is Paul's birthday show.
We can snark on David Caruso all night. I'm sure most of the snark will come from Helen tonight because I know how much she loves David Caruso.
Yes, Helen, regale us with your tales of how much you love David Caruso and that fat red hair of his.
Definitely not a fan.
Why not?
Because he's a ginger fuck, that's why. But,
soulless
bastard.
She's the one in the car singing the fucking Ed Sheeran all the way home to
this
today.
This is birthday today. Ed Sheeran can sing. I don't care.
Oh, Jesus Lord God.
I listened to this podcast.
It has nothing to do with his red hair.
So it must not be the red hair on David Caruso. So why don't you like the guy? Is it the whole CSI thing? Where he's like, yeah!
I was going to say.
Taking off the sunglasses.
He's a horrible actor.
He is.
He overacts everything.
He is.
The fire took over.
Wait a minute.
Every time you see him in the show tonight, we have to go.
It looks like, the fire took him out.
Yeah!
You just scared Angry Cat.
Fuck you, Angry Cat.
This, I mean, it's low budget. 2001?
Something like
2000? 2001.
Yeah. Okay.
Low budget. It was him and I think, I can't remember who else was the other
couple of unknowns.
But it was another kind of bigger...
Paul Guilfoyle's
in it. Yeah, and there was somebody else that I can kind of recognize.
Peter Mullen, Josh Lucas, Stephen Gordon... Brendan Sexton III,
that's the one. He was in Empire Records and those kind of films towards the late 90s.
Right.
So it's not a huge cast. I haven't seen it for a while, I will say that.
Okay, but you know it well?
Oh, yeah, very well. Plus, the other thing I do like about it is the setting.
Right.
The fact that it is a haunted film, but it's set in an insane asylum.
That's my next question. That's the one thing that's been bothering me is I don't remember a haunting element to the film. You're saying it is there. So we can do this with the theme.
Yes. I mean, it's an insane asylum. They're in there. They're, I want to say they're asbestos removers.
Yes.
Yeah. They're, something along that line.
They want to reopen the hospital.
Right. And it's, there's something in there with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a little murky as it is. Is it ghosts? Is it demons?
There's a little hint of possession.
There's something in there. So it might be a little, if it is truly a haunted house film, like a haunted film, I think it's enough there to say it is.
We shall see. Because it's been all week it's been bothering me, because I'm like, okay, Paul B wants to do it. It's his birthday. I want to give it to him. Let's do it now.
I appreciate that.
And but is it a haunted film? You know, if there's any kind of spiritual influence in this movie at all, then I can breathe a sigh of relief and give our listeners exactly what we promised for this year. This will be part of the haunted house dwelling theme.
Apparently, you can look at it as almost like the Babadook, in that it could be one thing or it could be something completely different.
Right.
So I think it depends on how you're taking the film. I personally take it as the building is, because it's an abandoned insane asylum. It's Danvers State Asylum, which is notorious as one of the most haunted places in America.
Well, you know what? We're fucking doing it. All right. Session 9, Paul B. Yay. For your birthday, we're doing Session 9. Where's Nude?
Right here.
Nude, we're about ready to get this shit on now, the road.
Do we have to have seen Sessions 1 through 8 to understand
this? No, this isn't like Leonard Part 6, right? This isn't Leonard Part 6. There's just Session 9. There's no prequel. There's no sequel. There's just Session fucking 9. Let's get to it.
And I gotta get construction crews in here by Columbus Day, so you got a guesstimate how long?
I've got 4 really good guys. 1 week, we're gone.
That's fast. I need the job.
So the loonies are outside in the real world, and here we are with the keys to the loony bin, boys.
You might actually want to be grateful, and you're about to make some decent money.
What's the catch?
Patricia Willard scandal, 1984.
I want you to try to remember what happened 24 years ago.
Use your imagination.
The shrinks figured that with these new techniques they designed, they could release hidden memories.
You can hear me.
You okay?
I want to go home.
I wouldn't tell anybody about this. If they find out about Hank, they're going to find out about the others.
Quit at the others.
I want to come home. I am so sorry.
...1871. That's when she went up, gentlemen. We called her the Kirkbride Building, named after Dr. Thomas Kirkbride. Well, that's a pretty simple layout, really, you know? If you consider a giant flying bat, you know, the main staff buildings in the middle, the bat body, and slanting off to each side are these, like, giant crooked bat wings. You know, one for female patients, the other for male, you know? Ah, a bat.
This is Danvers State Hospital.
Is that what they called it?
No, that's legitimately it. That was the name and that was the place. That was legitimately Danvers State Hospital.
The place is a character, right? Yes. Like, I like how they give you the huge exterior shots of it. I mean, even the shape of the building is sinister.
Well, I mean, he goes in when they go in with the owner, and he calls it the bat. Because when you look at it from above, it looks like it's got large wings stretching out from a center point.
It almost looks like a collection of self-contained buildings that are connected by one singular hallway.
It's a campus, right?
Yeah, so you've got the way it teeters off from the main building. It's like you can see each building is identical in shape and size, so they're like replicated buildings that are all connected.
And you get the nice, he's going through and he explains how large it is. You know, it's got its own restaurant, it's got its own movie theater, it's got its own hospital. Like, it like
had a bowling alley.
We didn't see the bowling alley. They mention it.
Right? Yeah.
What the fuck is this?
Oh, what are you, a little scared, Phil? This is hydrotherapy. Used to be cutting edge. They soaked the nut jobs in cold water. I guess that was a way to chill them out. I don't know.
Or they'd give them a lobotomy. Yeah, the prefrontal lobotomy was perfected here at Danvers.
Sounds like you've done your homework.
Well, you know, my wife Elizabeth, she's a town historian. She likes to keep me in the know. Hey, there's a fantastic morgue in the basement where they do the postmortems off.
Bill, could you show us the problem areas?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
I'm surprised we didn't see the electric shock therapy areas.
No, but they make reference to it a couple of times.
They remember the hydrotherapy.
The hydrotherapy, the pool. Yeah. And you see, as they're going through the first time, when they're walking through with the owner, you can see as they're going through the room, you can see the utensils, the machinery that they would use for it. You can see like the I don't know what you call
the headsets?
It. The headsets with the large, you know, the large plugs on the side that they would use for that. So like it's obviously, I mean, these are not pleasant places. You know, and they hit on that quite well. That these are not pleasant places.
Hello. Gordon.
Cody? It's me, man. Come on.
But I think Helen has the best element of the film is when you're introduced to the building and you're going through that first walkthrough with Gordon and with his second in command and the guy that's giving him the tour, he hears Simon's voice.
Yeah.
And it just calls his name and that's like
that's it. Well, and he notices it. He hears it, right? Like he acknowledges it, but
I like too, the empty chair at the end of the long hall implies that somebody is sitting there, right? Something we don't see is sitting in the empty chair. And then we hear the voice. And it's perfect cinematography.
We'll be in on Monday, we'll be out the following Monday.
I thought you said 2 weeks.
1 week. I'll do it in 1 week. I've got four really good guys. I'll hire another guy. 1 week, we're gone.
1 week?
1 week.
That's fast.
Uh-huh. I'm good for it. You know I'm good for it. I need the job. I really need this job.
Basically, there was only like three or four. I mean, the place is huge, obviously. Like, you see the place and you're like, okay, if they had to clean out the entire building, no fucking way. But I got the feeling that most of it's just going to be a reno job. There was like three or four sections of the building that needed to be cleaned professionally.
Well, they make a point of like, that's what it is, because obviously, just the reality of it is they couldn't get it done.
Yeah, it would take 20 people a month to clean that place out.
If that. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been...
They don't wear their masks a lot, but given all the water damage, I'd be really concerned about mold inhalation more than almost as much as the asbestos.
I would agree.
I would have the rebreather on the entire time.
Because they say this place has been derelict for 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's water a good quarter inch deep on all those floors.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I'd be worried more about mold than anything.
You know, Gordo, you finally landed us the perfect gig. Next time someone says what we do is crazy, just say, yeah, well, we work in an insane asylum.
You might actually want to be grateful, my man. You're about to make some decent money.
Yeah, what, $5 an hour?
They all have their own hang-ups in this. They're all broken people going to a place where broken people probably shouldn't work.
Yeah.
Toxins or deep, dank places for over prolonged periods of time.
Hey, Phil. Hey, Amy says hi.
Keep it up, dickhead.
Don't shoot the messenger, Phil. I'm just relaying information. She says to me this morning while we're laying in bed to say hi to you.
Keep it up.
Yeah, I got it up. That's the problem, right?
I think a part of this, the problem for me, a big problem, is I really don't root for anybody in this film. There's nobody that's really likable. Hank's a piece of shit, right? Right from the start, he's a piece of shit. He's one of those instigating assholes. He's got nothing to say unless he's being a piece of shit.
Well, he's banging Buddy's ex, he's making fun of it.
Yeah, like he doesn't even like the girl. He's just fucking her to get under this guy's skin, because that's his persona, right?
He also knows everyone's buttons, and he's not ashamed to bring it up just to pass the time. He's that kind of a dick.
Yeah.
What are you, dude, a lobotomy case?
Jeff. Come on, man. Jeff, don't do that.
Lobotomy! the nephew there, like...
That's the guy I recognize from Empire Records.
The nephew with the mullet?
Do you ever see Empire Records?
No.
Did you ever see it?
Yeah.
He's the shoplifter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, complete mouth breather.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Like, a complete dude bro, right? Oh, dude bro, that's all you get out of him. Man. Right, nude?
Gordon was nice. I kind of felt bad for him.
Well, the nephew wasn't innocent. Okay. He was just a kid. Well, summer job.
That's what he's saying. Mouth breather. That's the guy you don't like.
Yeah, I like how there's this fear of contamination in the movie. Everyone kind of looks like they've been infected by the place. The dust in the air, or cutting themselves, or reaching into a crematorium to sift through the ashes or
putting on a toe ring.
Yeah. So they've kind of touched by the place. It's seeped into their blood.
I know this is difficult, Mary, and that's why we're here to help, okay?
I miss Peter. I miss him so much.
Mary, I want you to try to remember what happened 22 years ago on Christmas night in Lowell.
That's where we grew up.
Yes. Can you tell me what happened that night in Lowell?
Nothing happened.
Mary, something did happen. That's why we have these sessions, to help you remember, so you can get better, okay?
No! Oh, I can't remember!
I like how he comes across the evidence box, and you're wanting, like, session 9, what kind of title is that kind of deal? And then you figure out that there's a series of tapes of a doctor interviewing this patient, and there's 9 of them.
And that's where I screwed up, because I kept thinking that it was a found footage film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why in my head I kept thinking that there was actual, like, video footage. And it wasn't. It's audio.
Mary. Mary.
Have you seen our doll, Mr. Doctor?
Who am I speaking with?
Mary got a China doll from her mommy, and we can't find it now.
No, Princess, I haven't seen it. Maybe Billy knows where your China doll is.
Billy, silly.
Princess, tell me what happened on Christmas 22 years ago in Lowell.
I liked listening to the interview, the doctor interviewing the patients, I guess.
Well, the Mary patient.
Yeah,
so yeah, going their, through the sessions.
Personalities and stuff. Not so much like the sessions, just the conversations and stuff. Because you touched upon it too, the movie and book based on Sybil. I really enjoyed that aspect of it, just because I've seen a lot of movies, read a lot of books, and I just like the back and forth and listening to the voices. Because I mean, obviously there are different voices, but it's one person. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I like it. It starts out with the patient,
and
she's broken. You can tell she's broken. She's exhausted. She's frightened, and she's scared, and she's everything. And then the princess comes out, and the change of voice is kind of startling.
Yeah.
And it's like this kind of like little tutti frutti little girl persona. Oh, hey, what's going on, Mr. Doctor?
I'm tired, Mr. Doctor.
Maybe Billy would like to talk now.
Billy's asleep, Mr. Doctor.
That shit exists, ladies and gentlemen. Multiple personalities?
Yes, it does.
That shit exists. Sybil, how many did she have? 32? Questions I'd like answered, like, okay, this cachet of coins. Like, you got coins that are over 100 years old just in the middle of a hallway that's been picked over a billion times by a billion people in the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like breadcrumbs being led to this cache in the
wall.
Is
it the entity? Is the entity setting it up? Right? Because he's... The other side of that wall is the crematorium.
Right.
So is he setting it up? Is he trying to... As Brian was saying before, is he trying to expose other people to... the quote-unquote asbestos, the whatever it is in the film.
The contagion.
Yeah.
But I also like the scene before that that sets it up where he finds the coins on the floor. And I love that pull-away shot from the other side of that brick wall. He's kind of pulled the bricks out of, and he's finding all this treasure and this loot that's dumping out. And he's reaching through in there, and it's all the ash from the human remains that have been burned in the crematorium.
Yeah, because the other side of the wall was the inside of a crematorium.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that. He doesn't know what he's filming.
No, because they never even go in there.
No, they never go to the other side of that wall.
No.
But I like how we get to see everything from the other side of that wall, that beautiful camera as it pulls back, and it only adds an unsettling element for us, and it just adds to the atmosphere, and it doesn't add anything to the plot where the loot comes from. He doesn't need to know that, but we see it, and it makes us feel uncomfortable. It makes us uneasy, and it works really well. And knowing that, if he had kind of known what it was, maybe he'd be a little creeped out about me going back there at night. So when he returns, he sees it as a payday. We're creeped out because we know it's fucked up.
when Hank goes back to get his booty, and he's hearing shit, and you're like, what's down there with him kind of deal? And then, sure enough, it's a faraway shot. You just see the silhouette of somebody walking in towards him. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and it reminded me of walking around in old, dilapidated places, and you're constantly under this anxiety of like, okay, what would I do if this thing just kind of walked into view? What, how would I react?
Or you just see a silhouette that you don't quite recognize.
You know, and his reaction is pretty much what I would do, is shit my pants and go in the other direction.
What I like, too, is that at some point when he's trying to exit, there are the signs clearly demarking patient and staff.
Yeah.
And he goes down the patient corridor after we fully know well what happens to patients in this place.
Yep.
And it's like, that's the wrong way.
It's hard to discuss any part of this film without spoiling the fuck out of it. You know what I mean?
Like,
the last 5 minutes of the film is really
the payoff.
Well, not just that, but the heart of the film. Everything else is just kind of misdirection.
Well, our favorite piece of shit, Hank, went to Amy's last night, packed his car, told her that he found his meal ticket, and then bolted to Miami to casino school.
Lucky fuck!
Gordy, this is a blessing. We replace this asshole and we move forward. What's the problem?
But the whole misdirection about David Caruso there taking his cell phone, calling his ex-girlfriend to figure out where Hank is, and then coming out, well, you'll never believe this. Obviously, that conversation never took place because,
it's in his own head.
Who knows? Misdirection. Right. You know, did that conversation take place? Was it something he made up? Was he trying to cover something? Because you're thinking, well, David Caruso has been trying to get rid of this guy since the beginning of the film. He's got motive to fucking wipe this guy out, right. Literally. Did he do it?
Now, can you tell me who the princess is?
No idea.
And who Billy is?
I don't know anyone named Billy.
Who is Simon, Mary?
I have no idea who Simon is. I am sick of
Mary,
this session.
Calm down.
I just want to go back to my room.
Mary? Mary?
Mary is asleep, sir.
Billy, why won't you tell me what happened in Lowell? I know you saw what happened.
You know perfectly well what happened, sir.
But Mary needs to know what happened, Billy. She needs to remember.
No!
Well, then maybe Simon would like to tell me what happened.
He's asleep.
Help me wake up Simon,
no!
Billy. We must wake up Simon,
I won't
Billy.
Scare her.
Billy, we have to wake up Simon.
And then when Billy comes in, there's another change of voice, and you're thinking, is this coming from the same person? And he's going through the file. And you're reading up it, yep, there's multiple personalities from this 14-year-old girl, and he's looking for this Simon. Where's Simon? Nobody wants to talk about Simon. Simon ain't coming out. Only Billy knows about Simon. Mary doesn't know about Simon. Princess doesn't know about Simon, but Billy does, and Billy is not going there. He's like, no, we ain't going there.
Billy's afraid of Simon.
I found Hank.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I just found Hank. In the stairwell, he was just standing.
Don't be a fucking idiot, okay?
I swear he was. I'm not lying. Why would I make this up?
No, Jeff. Hey, listen to me, guys. Now, you heard me on the phone with Amy. Am I right? She said Hank went to where? Miami. Okay? Now, we heard it. We all heard it, right?
No. No, we didn't.
What are you saying, Gordon?
You told us that's what she said, but we didn't hear say it. We saw you on the phone, we heard you on the phone, we didn't hear Amy.
Right, so what you're saying to me is it wasn't Amy on the phone. Is that what you... Mike, now come on, man. This is what I'm talking to you about.
Mike, give me the cell phone.
Why?
What? Because I want to talk to Amy.
What? I spoke to Amy. You don't need to speak to Amy.
Give me the cell phone.
Don't give him the fucking cell phone.
Give me the cell phone.
Mike, this is what I'm trying to tell you. He's losing it, man.
Mike, give me the cell phone.
This is what I'm telling you. He's losing it. Look at him. He's losing it, man.
Give me the fucking cell phone!
What the fuck was that?
It's Hank!
It's Hank!
Okay. Jeff, Mike, go downstairs and be sure he doesn't turn around. You come with me.
Hey,
Fuck you. You come with me. Let's go.
Mike!
Come on, Jeff!
The last 10-15 minutes are heart-pounding, riveting, you can't blink. Is that good?
Billy, I need to talk to Simon. We need Billy, wait. Oh, Simon. Billy.
No!
And then session 9, he's reading up that, yeah, all of a sudden Simon appeared and they lose power. And we're like, no! No, we need to hear Simon. What does Simon sound like, right? What is this going to be like?
We need to wake up Simon. Wake up Simon.
And, okay, when the power was going out and that kid with the fear of the dark was caught in that long hallway, and there it looked like a whole bunch of transparent suits.
There were gloves. There
were attached gloves. To suits, yeah. Right? Who thought one of them was going to, like, come and jump yeah. out at him or something like that? I was hoping for something
but
like that.
You just, you're going to ask it later, but that's my favorite scene. Because we've already established that he's terrified of the dark.
Yeah.
And that it's just progressively going. And I know and that it wouldn't happen that way. You lose power completely. It doesn't go off of stages.
But it's
going off behind him as he's running towards yeah. whatever he's running towards. He's terrified of what he's running towards, but he's more scared of the dark behind him.
Yeah.
So that's my favorite scene.
He's in a bad spot there.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, and then he's completely engulfed.
And he rips his safety suit off and he's just engulfed in the dust.
Yeah. I felt sorry for him. Like, yeah you're in trouble.
Especially
yeah. if he'd have lived,
yeah,
he would have been news. In trouble.
Yeah.
Because even after he got the horror story of what it does once it gets into your lungs and it starts to infect and grow over it and you start choking out your own lung fluid.
Yeah.
And he has that in the back of his mind the whole time.
Hello, Doc.
Simon?
You know who I am.
Billy has told me a lot about you.
Billy is a smart boy.
What happened on Christmas night in Lowell?
Use your imagination.
I'd rather you tell me, Simon.
I like how the Simon part was played in absentia. Nobody was there except for us. It was like it was private, just for us.
Peter, he shouldn't have done it, Doc.
Tell me, Simon.
He scared Mary, Doc. He crept up behind her in the dark. He scared her. Mary fell down, Doc. She fell on her doll. It cut her up, Doc. It cut her up real bad. She needed someone to help her. So I introduced myself. And I told her to clip up Peter, Doc.
Do it, Mary.
To cut him up real bad, too.
Simon says, kill your family. Oh, okay, well, Simon says, it's all good, right? Simon said, it's all good, no problem.
I thought Simon said to push all of the flashing, multicolored lights with the sound.
Oh my God, Gordon!
This guy's been fucked since the beginning.
Loss of reality.
You know? Since the beginning of this job, this guy has committed horrible murder of his entire family.
Do it, Gordon. Do it now.
This is Gordon.
We
found the one. The one responsible.
But even knowing what he had done, I feel bad for him. You know, like he's gone. He's snapped. Like there was a human being there once. You know, it's just, what kind of hell is that?
You did this, Gordon. I need you to wake up and take a really, really good look at him.
Still in shock, right? Because the whole thing, they actually brought up the idea of repressed memory. Like, it took him a while to come to terms with the fact of what he had done, because he was sleeping in the car. He wasn't going back home to where his wife and kid were killed.
Well, he was lying, even. He said he's getting a motel room.
He was staying in a motel, yeah. And he was sleeping in the car the entire time, or in the truck. The end of the film is when Simon emerges at the end of the last session tape, is also when he comes to realize what he had done.
And purges the rest of his fucking kin?
Yeah, I think so.
You hired those guys to do this.
Gordy, you are asleep.
You hired those guys to kill him.
You're asleep.
Where are the others?
Open your eyes.
What are they?
You gotta wake up.
You tell me where they are.
Would you wake up?
Tell me.
Would you wake up?
I am fucking awake!
Like, everybody else had to die?
Well, he is crazy.
I guess so.
I like how he put all the bodies in their own separate cells.
Yeah,
that was interesting. Rooms.
Place them as well.
Yeah.
Wendy, it's me. Please don't hang up, please. I just want to say how sorry I am for what's happened. I am so sorry. I am so lonely here.
He's been trying to call his wife on the phone the entire film.
Can you forgive me? Did you like at the end how the phone was busted?
Yeah, there's no battery.
You can see through the phone. Yeah. The case is broken.
The phone is a shell.
Well, you heard him fall on it. You saw him fall on it.
Yeah,
that gave you the idea.
I want to come home. I want to hold you. I want to hold my baby. You forgive me.
There is an entity in the film. You do see a specter.
Did the place drive them to madness? Is it actually a ghost?
I think the
place has a lot to do with it. It is the center of it, right?
I say yes, but...
You know what I'd like to see is that this could have been an entire horror series where Simon just starts showing up in all these various places, mental hospitals, and this common personality that just seems to infect weak or damaged people arising. That would be so neat. That would be one of the great horror villains, I think. Why not?
Mental illness.
It's like a Badoog or whatever that thing is in Sinister.
Or
makes the children demon, kill their family or something like that. And then collects their souls.
Yeah.
Maybe Simon is Legion. It's Exorcist 3.
It's gonna get ugly.
Nude? Give me a good score.
Give it an honest score.
Six.
A six on this one.
Yeah. Like you said earlier, I was a bit confused too as to what, you know, who was doing what, who is actually responsible. I do think there is hints of haunting, just because there's no one alive, so it's an entity. So an entity could be a ghost, it could be a spirit, it could be residual from the location. So I will give that to you as a haunting, Paul.
Okay.
It was a good watch, and I, you know, made it through the Caruso acting. And
that had to be the scariest part of the film for you.
A couple of parts were like kind of had me roll my eyes, but no, it was good.
What about fuck you?
Yeah, that was one of them. Yeah, it's like really.
I warned her, didn't I? I fucking warned this bitch, didn't I?
Okay, six from Nude. Brian Stewart, score it.
I'm going to give it an 8. I like the atmosphere. I like Peter Mullen, who plays Gordon. His performance is spot on. It's such a well-nuanced performance. You can tell he's not getting any sleep. And as it progresses, he's getting more and more sleep-deprived. We think that's the reason. But you can see him unravel in a good timeline there. And, I don't know. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it with Paul years ago. It's just as good now, having remembered a lot of the pieces. It uses its setting extremely well. I like heavy atmospheric films, but I would say this is, you know, a kind of modern day look. We had that Legend of Hell House vibe, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed this too.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about fatherhood is screwing this guy's head up, and it's fucking this job up. At the very least, Mike, he should have canned Hank's ass 6 months ago, and you know it. What are you looking at? Where you going, Mike?
I'm gonna go take a piss.
You got 25.
Paul B, score it?
I will give it... I'll match Brian's 8. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it, way back in 2001, 2002, I guess it would have been. Enjoy it now. David Caruso, yes, he overacts quite a bit.
Fuck you!
Fuck you! And he's very Caruso-esque in the other scenes where he's not overacting. He's, you know, very aggressive and in your face and... he's not a very pleasant person. You can kind of just tell. I like Gordon. I think his performance was excellent. I like the lawyer. I think the lawyer is probably my favorite performance of the film.
I mean, he's basically there just to give relevance to the title.
Yes, he is. But I don't know. I like the understated aspect of his performance. I do think it's a haunting film. I do think that whatever's in there is what tipped Gordon over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it works with the theme you're going for this year. And I appreciate the fact that we did it.
Good first day, guys.
Yeah, keeps up like this, well, I'll be dead by Monday. Hey, fuck you, Phil.
I'm somewhere between a 6.5 and a 7. You know, it was shot well. I love the building. You know, like, I want to go there.
It doesn't exist anymore. It's been demolished.
That's a shame, because I would have loved to have been able to go through the building myself just to see how spooky it is first person. You know, like, obviously, they're going to set it up, the camera and the lighting, in a way to make it as spooky as possible, you know.
But that's legitimately what it looked like.
Oh, I'm sure.
From above, that's what it looked like.
I'm sure. I like the dread. I love the specter. I like the paranoia. I don't like how the paranoia turns out to be kind of a red herring. It, you know, I was hoping that it would flush out. I was kind of hoping that everybody was going insane in this joint. That would have probably been a little bit more of a payoff, but it went the direction it went, and I'm satisfied with that. I'd like to know what happened to Gordon after this. Like, you know, like, does he kill himself? Does he stay there? Like, if he just walked into the wall and became part of the building, I'd be satisfied with something as stupid as that. Just give me something, right? Yeah. Instead of just him sitting in a room and then give me credits, you know? Like, okay. Mm-hmm. I like how there is not one single part of levity. It's a dark film. You know, everything, like, things go from bad to worse. Like, you're introduced to this shithole, you got these characters that have high anxiety, and things just go from bad to worse. The characters aren't very likable, you know, and then you got the paranoia, and you know off the scenes that something's not right. You're not quite sure what it is, but something's not right. It's awkward, there's high anxiety, there's a lot at stake for this company, and it just goes from bad to worse. And I appreciated that, but I don't know. It'll probably be another 20 years before I watch it again. So I'll give it about a 6.5, 7. I would have liked for them to have come across... They only had the one case of this Mary girl. I would have liked for them to show a couple of more cases or stories where something similar happened to somebody else in that building. Now you can start to put together a puzzle where there might be a pattern.
Right.
You know? There might be a pattern to this. It's not just Mary and it's not just Gordon. There might be a pattern to this kind of whatever it is. You know? Call it supernatural influence. Call it mental illness. You decide.
Right.
You decide.
And where do you live, Simon?
I live in the weak and the wounded.
Hey,
And there it is, folks. Horror 101, episode 96, featuring Brad Anderson's Session 9 from 2001. This was one of the first films to be shot with digital 24p cameras, and you can really see the difference in the picture. Digital photography has come a long way since then. We realize the haunting element is a bit vague. Certainly there is a big human element in the story, but we couldn't help but notice a lot of similarities between Session 9 and The Shining. Another film where spirits in the building seem to have a big influence on the behavior of its occupants. It's up to the viewers to decide what is real and what is not. In any case, we hope you enjoyed this show. We're uncertain what episode 97 will focus on, but I'm sure there will be some hint of that in our next Cutting Room Floor segment. If you're interested in getting access to those, consider going to patreon.com/horror101 and dropping us a pledge. Supporting listeners have exclusive access to those segments and help keep the podcast alive. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the nefarious Paul B., and my wife, the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
As he's going through the later sessions,
that's Simon.
That's
true. Oh, yeah, but what the fuck was that?
Running.
That's not running, Helen. That's she something does. Bouncing like a ball or something.
Oh, she's probably playing with it's my
other
stuff.
Nude, I elect you to go upstairs and figure out what that was.
She's probably playing with one of her stuffies.
She's going to go upstairs and a pink rubber ball is going to bounce down the stairs.
We're going to go upstairs and there's a balloon.
Okay.
A red balloon
I'm
sitting on the floor.
I'm putting up the fucking for sale sign and we're leaving. Like, right now. I'm going to investigate this right fucking now.
While you do that, I'm going to go pee.
Andrew, we'll be right back.
I'll be right back.
You done fucked up, boy?
Is anybody up there? Make yourselves known immediately.